Welcome to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Assistant Editor Skylar Jeremias. A recent survey conducted by the American College of Rheumatology, or ACR, indicated that a large portion of patients with rheumatic diseases were unsure if they had been prescribed a biosimilar before, suggesting a major knowledge gap among patients on how biosimilars differ from reference biologics. Additionally, the survey showed a 52% decline in the percentage of respondents who said they were currently being treated by a rheumatologist versus the number under treatment a year earlier. Patients also reported that wait times to be seen by a rheumatologist increased between 2019 and 2020. Both of these findings were likely partly due to the coronavirus disease 2019, also known as COVID-19 pandemic, that has changed how practices conduct business and deprived some patients of the economic means and health insurance to continue seeing their provider. We sat down with Dr. Kanika Monga, a rheumatologist at Houston Methodist Hospital in Texas and a member of the ACR's Communication and Marketing Committee, and Dr. Angus Worthing, a rheumatologist at Arthritis and Rheumatism Associates, PC, in Chevy Chase, Maryland, and a member of the Board of Directors of the ACR, to discuss the results of this survey and what the rheumatology field is expected to look like post-COVID-19. So to start us off, tell us a bit more about the survey, why you conducted it, who you surveyed, and what you found.
The American College of Rheumatology conducted the survey in conjunction with Rheumatic Disease Awareness Month 2020 in order to gain insights into the unique patient access, affordability, and lifestyle challenges rheumatic disease patients face. This survey is the second one the ACR has done and actually builds on the results of last year's National Patient Survey and aims to measure how these issues have changed over time. It was conducted between June 5th to 8th of 2020, and the ACR surveyed 1,109 U.S. adults who self-reported that they were living with a rheumatic disease. These findings show that Americans living with a rheumatic disease face significant challenges in their daily lives, including treatment access and affordability issues, lifestyles and activity limitations, and negative effects on mental and emotional health. It is critical for patients, clinicians, and policymakers to work together to improve rheumatology care so that those living with these diseases can live longer, healthier, and more fulfilling lives.
According to the survey, about 29% of respondents who reported taking a prescription medication were not sure if they were on a biosimilar or not. Should physicians and healthcare centers work harder to ensure patients understand their medications better?
You know, I'll just clarify that the survey showed about 29% weren't sure whether they had been prescribed a biosimilar drug, not whether they were actually taking one. I think every patient should know about the medications they're taking, and the survey suggests that over 70% know whether they've been prescribed a biosimilar or not. I think that the number of patients knowing about biosimilars is increasing over the last 5 years as we get more access to them in the clinic. But right now, there are only biosimilars available for two reference products, infliximab and rituximab. I think once biosimilars become available in the marketplace for more reference products, many more patients will begin taking them and have access to them, and the level of knowledge will naturally increase as they learn about their new treatment options.
What else is important about patient education about biosimilars in rheumatology? Is an important opportunity being missed here?
I think the most important piece of information patients deserve to know about biosimilars is that they can be expected to be therapeutically equivalent to their reference biologic drug. But a lot of the education about biosimilars should be about the basic facts that people already are learning about biologics. In other words, what to expect about the risks and benefits, how the drug is administered, and the basics about why it's being prescribed.
Aside from physician consultations, do you feel that the quality of information available about biosimilars in rheumatology is adequate for patients and also for physicians who need to make these decisions?
Doctors and patients both have access to excellent information at the FDA and at dedicated professional and patient organizations like the American College of Rheumatology. I tried it today. It only takes a few seconds of an internet search for example, quote, FDA biosimilars page. And if one just scrolls past one or two search engine advertisements, they'll find this top line phrase, quote, biosimilars are safe, effective treatment options, end quote. So I think the information is out there, like I say, at FDA, at ACR, and other organizations. And it's just a matter of going through them and finding them.
Related to that, what can be done to improve biosimilar education in rheumatology? What would you want from payers and manufacturers in terms of more clarity or objectivity?
We know that prescribers' and patients' knowledge of biosimilars improves when they gain access to them in the clinic. So clearly the main thing I think that needs to be done to improve knowledge about biosimilars is to just make them available. Once a drug is available for prescription and covered by the pharmacy benefit manager, formularies, and payers, prescribers and patients can do the rest to make sure everyone's informed about the best treatment options.
Step therapy requirements affected 46.17% of surveyed patients, which can allow greater access to biosimilars. However, some view step therapy as forcing patients to go against their provider's recommendations. What are your thoughts on step therapy and its impact on biosimilar uptake?
In my clinic, I've actually seen step therapy to be more of a barrier to biosimilars because about a third of the time I prescribed a biosimilar, the pharmacy benefit manager or insurance company declined coverage of the drug. So I see it as a barrier in some cases. But insurers and PBMs could also use step therapy to force essentially the uptake of biosimilars through different coverage of formularies. I would also note that the concept of interchangeability, as that comes out in the future, where a medication, if it gains this designation from the FDA of being interchangeable, a pharmacist could substitute that interchangeable biosimilar for the prescription written by the prescriber. So interchangeability as a concept might make step therapy unnecessary or moot point in the future.
Now, biosimilars were not mentioned in the ACR's 2019 National Patient Survey, but can you say whether you've seen a change in biosimilar use or knowledge?
While the ACR did not include a question about biosimilars in the 2019 survey, we decided to include one this year because we felt that it is an important subject for us to collect information about. We hope that in future surveys, we can continue to measure patient knowledge about biosimilars to see how education and uptake changes over time. You know, personally, in my clinic, even going through fellowship, first year compared to second year, I noticed that the county had started using Inflectra instead of infliximab. And my patients that did experience that change were very comfortable with it. I had an opportunity to educate them about biosimilars. So with that being said, I still think as drugs become more available, like Dr. Worthing mentioned, that knowledge and that curiosity about biosimilars will increase, and that appetite increase will cause more information to be disseminated and more awareness.
What important trends have you seen in rheumatology, particularly during the COVID-19 crisis?
I think one of the biggest changes we've seen, at least in the immediate term, has been the rapid adoption of telehealth. Many practices went from doing very few telehealth visits to almost completely virtual. That point is certainly reflected in the survey results. Our survey found that about two-thirds, or 66%, of patients reported having a telehealth appointment with their rheumatologist within the past year, with COVID-19 reported as the most common reason. And that was half of the respondents indicated that as their reason for having a telehealth visit, around 52%.
When post-COVID-19 studies begin to appear, showing data on types of drugs used, patient access costs, and treatment patterns in rheumatology, what do you expect we'll see?
You know, I expect when post-COVID-19 studies come out, we'll see various patterns emerging in rheumatology clinic. Early on in the pandemic, a lot of people skipped their doctor visits or their infusion drug visits, or essentially took themselves off of treatment because of fear that it might worsen their immunity in a viral pandemic. So there's probably going to be a trend of reduced utilization. Unfortunately, we're also seeing disease flares, and we've already started treating people and making them better after their disease has flared after stopping treatment. There might also be a move to self-injectable biologic and biosimilar medications because of, again, the need to stay home and avoid going out to clinic to get an infusion. By the way, many offices and infusion centers have taken great pains, like the one I work in the Washington, D.C. metro area, to make sure there's social distancing and adequate protective equipment for patients and providers. So overall, I think we'll probably see some trends towards reducing utilization and, unfortunately, disease flares. Possibly more conventional synthetic DMARDs, like old pill form drugs like methotrexate. But overall, we're noticing that registry data suggests these biologic medicines appear to be just as safe as conventional DMARDs in the pandemic when people contract COVID-19. So my hope is that most of our patients can feel comfortable with that once they've talked to their doctor about continuing the therapy that's working for them.
Well, Dr. Manga and Dr. Worthing, thank you for sharing your insights with us. And thank you to our listeners for tuning into this episode of Not So Different. You can find additional information in the show notes. And until next time, you can visit us at centerforbiosimilars.com.